It was the summer of 1972, July 28th to be exact. Richard Nixon was in the White House. Bob Dylan had already gone electric. But in Minot, North Dakota, a farming and railroad town on the northern plains, it seemed like a normal day. It wasn't. Two friends, young men barely 20 years old, walking down Main Street were stopped dead in their tracks by something very special. In the window of a small music store, there was an old guitar, a Gibson flat-top acoustic with a sunburst finish that brightened to an auburn glow. The sound hole was scarred to raw wood from hard picking. It was the kind of guitar Hank Williams might have flat-picked in the backseat of a 48 Packard speeding toward Nashville.
It was all a mystery, and you could only imagine, how did it end up in the music store? Why would anybody sell such a thing? You know, we could never really know who had played it, how it ended up in North Dakota, where those scars came from and how they occurred. And I've thought about it many times, you know, and imagined that perhaps some folk singer or Woody Guthrie type person, you know, had that guitar, carried it around, and made wonderful music with it.
That's my friend Dan Jelton. And the other young man looking through that window that day was me. We walked in and the clerk told us the price was $100. Since neither of us had that kind of money, we decided we'd buy the old Gibson together and trade it back and forth every year or so. We both had other guitars, but we decided this one would help us keep in touch. Dan and I had learned to play together. Our lives first intersected when we were teenagers, working at a summer camp up along the Canadian border.
There's something about singing songs at a campfire. You've done it hundreds and hundreds of times. That's actually pretty good training for playing the guitar. Mm-hmm. And we did that every day. And then after dark, often sat around trying to figure out all that other stuff on the guitar.
Right. So. All the other stuff on the guitar and all that other stuff about girls and life and politics.
We were definitely as hip as they come.
Our lighthearted camp days were already years behind us on that day we stopped in front of the music store. By that time, Dan was a war resister. He had just returned from a trip to Southeast Asia, Singapore and Malaysia, not Vietnam. I had dropped out of college and gotten married while Dan was abroad. My wife and I were living on a Chippewa Indian reservation in North Dakota, running a church youth program next to a beautiful lake. The reservation was a lonely and occasionally violent place, so we were very happy when Dan showed up. In fact, he got there just in time for a tense midnight visit from an Indian friend. Jim was fighting alcoholism and had come to tell us he was leaving.
The first night on the reservation, Jim drove up in a driving rainstorm, honking his horn, and you and I went out and sat in his car, and he'd been drinking, and he had on Indian drumming and chanting on his tape player in the car, so that was sort of in the background with the rain pouring down on the roof. And he said, "I've got my whole life in the back seat," and included in his whole life in the back seat was an electric guitar. And we eventually got him into a safe place, but following that, we went and played with him pretty often. I think he had a tendency to want to play "Just a Closer Walk with Thee" for some reason, which is a beautiful song, and I don't know. It's sort of wrapped up in my memories of that guitar as well. One of the keys to our relationship has been music, and I think as I listen to you play that I'm hearing myself play, and it reminds me that I learned how to play guitar at the same time that you did, and we learned from each other, I think, and learned from the same sources, really. People like Paul Simon and Doc Watson and all of the musicians that were prominent at the time were influencing both of us, and we were working all that stuff out together.
For the past two decades, Dan and I have lived halfway across the country from each other. He's had the guitar at his home in St. Paul, Minnesota. I would play it when I passed through. But busy and separate lives have meant the time between the visits continued to grow. Our deal and our friendship developed some cracks. Finally, when I began to hint that it was my turn to take the guitar home, Dan resisted.
I don't know. I had really become attached to it. And I was not looking forward to exchanging it with you again. I was secretly hoping that maybe you had forgotten about it.
But I hadn't, and I insisted. And I wonder if part of the reason that you went to get it appraised was that it passed your mind that you might buy it from me.
Yes, it did. My first thought was I'd give you your $50, you know, and then you would receive every penny back that you invested in that.
I don't think so.
You're not as dumb as that.
The appraisal surprised both of us. The beat-up old flat top that we'd bought for $100 is now worth more than $2,000. You see, despite its cosmetic flaws, it is an American classic, a guitar built in the 1940s, the golden age of American guitar making. Dan could certainly afford to buy me out today, and I dreamed briefly about other beautiful instruments I might acquire with the money. But we both decided it was worth a lot more than $2,000.
It's a concrete symbol of an enduring relationship, I think, between two people. It also, every time I pick it up, reminds me of that summer in North Dakota playing Just a Closer Walk with Thee with Jim Great Walker, and my own anxieties related to my own future, where I was kind of on my journey to sitting in the dark next to you playing America. All those things are wrapped up in that instrument for me.
We'll share it more equitably now. We've agreed that once a year we'll fly to a classic musical venue, Memphis, Nashville, the south side of Chicago, listen to some real musicians, and make a ritual exchange of our old guitar.